Hello everyone and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'll now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are John, Lynn and Chris, and they will be sharing their experience, strength and hope. Okay, so first of all, John, would you like to start us off, please?
I will do. Thank you very much, Judy. My name is John. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Experience, strength and hope. You know, I've been sober a while now and the blessings of the program have been amazing. You know, my drinking was, you know, I was a functioning alcoholic. When I went to one of my employees and I said to him, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And he said, oh, I thought you're just a good worker, you know, because I used to drink the night before and then 4 a.m. in the morning I'd come load the trucks, you know, because I'd be too scared I'd oversleep. So I would have these little plans in place so that I could drink longer at night so that I could get in the morning and function, you know. But my life was a mess. It truly was. You know, my family life was a mess. You know, when I realized when I was just broken. And I had to do something. So I walked into AA on a Sunday morning broken. I'd started drinking on the Friday. And, you know, I'd love to tell you it was an easy road. And I'd love to say to you, you know, it was really good for me to do it, but it wasn't. I had to learn it the hard way. You know, I was a repeat offender. I didn't get it right away. I didn't understand the message. You know, I had an issue with God because of my past in the military and what I'd seen, you know, and so there was a whole lot of issues, criminal past, you know, things that I had to look into, you know, and I believe I was born with a foundation of resentment. I believe that it's my responsibility every night to take those resentments and break them down. You know, because what happens is you build those building blocks up and then at the end of the day you've got this big wall, then you start isolating, then you start getting resentful, and my goodness, next thing you know, you're having your first drink. So I have to do certain things. You know, this program has taught me to live. I always laugh when Bob and Bill say that it's a suggested program. You know, I always laugh when that. I get a smirk because the suggestion is that you have to follow these rules if you want what we have. You know, go to any lengths, you know. What the big book has taught me is that I have the ability to change. You know, I have the ability to be a better person. You know, thank the Lord, my son has never seen me drink. I still carry antabuse in my wallet every day because I know it's like a backup. You know, every morning I wake up, I hand my will and my life over to a power greater than myself. And I call him God, but, you know, other people call them trees, nature, sea, whatever you want to call it. But as long as it keeps you sober, whatever keeps you sober, whatever works for you as an individual. And that's the path you have to find. You know, my first sponsor, I was a year sober and he started drinking and he drank himself to death. You know, that hit me very big because I put him on a pedestal. You know, he was the one that saved me. You know, he was the one that took me through the 12 steps. You know, he inspired me to be a better person, you know, and he got this brain tumor. And this is how cunning, baffling, powerful this disease is, because he got this tumor. When the tumor was removed, he thought he could drink again. You know, he thought that his life was going to change and he could have that first drink. And, you know, just the sadness of it, you know, that this amazing person just threw his life down the track, you know, and I miss him a lot, you know. He's, you know, his name was also John, so it's those memories that keep me from sober, you know. I don't want my kids to grow up with a drunk father, you know. I don't want them to have an abusive relationship, and I have an amazing relationship with them today. You know, the gift isn't money or power. The gift is that I can have peace. You know, one of my favorite writings in AA is this saying they've got about tolerance. It's the most lovable quality any human being can possess is tolerance. It is the vision that enables one to see things from another's viewpoint. It is the generosity that concedes to others the right to their own opinion and their own peculiarities. It is the bigness that enables us to let people be happy in their own way instead of our way. You know, with that and acceptance being the key to my serenity is the foundations of my sobriety. You know, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, you know, working really hard every day at my sobriety. You know, I still have to go to meetings. I still have to do the right thing. You know, I still have to make sure that I don't upset other people in my day. I have to make sure that I keep my side of the street clean. You know, it's not what other people do to me. You know, I had an interesting saying the other day that it's about my emotions, it's about dealing with my pain, and not making sure that I push that pain onto other people, and not making sure I push my emotional state onto other people, you know, and that's what the program has given me. You know, it was my lifeline. You know, God saved me from drowning, not for me to die of hunger on the beach, you know, and the nutrients are there, you know, the book is there, the people are there. The people in AA are amazing. I've met some of the most incredible people in AA that have just helped me on my journey. So I try give back, you know, I try and be there for other people. You know, I have a phone tree of almost 40 people in AA, you know, that I can contact and reach if I feel damaged, you know, or I wake up in the morning and the vultures on my bed. So I try really hard to follow the guidelines. You know, that's why I always laugh about that. It's a suggested program, but it's really not suggested. It's the only thing that's going to keep you sober. And it's the only thing that's going to make you, well, for my personal, that has saved my life, you know. So I really hope and pray that you find sobriety and you work hard at your program and, you know, and reach out. If you are struggling on your sobriety, reach out. You know, there's phone calls, there's texts, there's everything like that. So in my wisdom, I hope that I can stay sober because we only have the gift of sobriety for 24 hours. That's all we are gifted. We wake up in the morning. None of us know in 3 months' time or in 2 months' time. We only have today. So I pray for every moment. I say my serenity prayer. I say my fifth step prayer. And I hope that God gives me the strength to make it through another day because really I can't do it by myself. So, if you're feeling struggling or you're not, or you just can't cope, you know, reach out, you know, and it just, there's a lot of literature, and with the internet and with all the meetings online now, it's just amazing. You know, technology has really changed AA in an amazing way. So thank you for letting me open, and I hope you all have a great sober weekend.
Thank you so much, John. Lovely message of recovery. And Lynn, would you like to share with us now, please?
Yes, thank you. Hi, everyone. My name's Lynn. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, John, for opening up the meeting this morning. Experience, strength, and hope. My experience with alcohol started from a very young age. I was brought up in a family where alcohol was around everywhere. My first experience of having the taste of alcohol would have been maybe at 5. My father was a big drinker and would get me to get his beers out of the fridge, and I used to race to the fridge to get that beer so that I could have a sip of it and then pass it on. But it was never just a sip. It was always a guzzle until it was grabbed out of my hand. So it was really from a very young age that I liked the taste of alcohol, and that kind of just continued. In my early teens, you know, everyone around me was drinking and there was always parties at our house, and it was just the norm for me to just, you know, be like everybody else and drink and party. I then moved to the Gold Coast and, you know, it was always bear o'clock over there, whatever time of the day it was. And that just also continued when I moved to the UK. And, you know, when I was in my early 30s, everyone was settling down and starting families, getting married, all of that. And I was just doing the same thing. I was like living like a teenager in a 35-year-old body. I'd had quite a few mishaps where, you know, I'd fallen and I broke a tooth and that was it. I wasn't ever going to drink again and I continued the next day. And this just was a pattern that kept going because with this disease, it is a progressive disease. It doesn't get better. And therefore, you know, late 40s, I'm still drinking and then I reach for that morning drink. And, you know, I was living on my own and I thought it was okay. I wasn't hurting anybody. I was only hurting myself, you know. Everything was crumbling around me. You know, I didn't enjoy going to work, so I thought having a drink before work would just calm everything down because I didn't like the people that I worked with. Everything was just, you know, it was the blame game. You know, when alcohol takes over, you don't think straight. And for me, drinking was just to suppress everything that I had to deal with. So it was 1 year ago, nearly to this day, that I got sick and tired of being sick and tired and being that in that pity pit and that self-loathing and being in denial for all those years that, you know, I was ready to do something and it didn't help that I was covered in psoriasis from almost head to toe. And I had to go to the doctor because it was summertime, it was hot, and I needed some medication to sort this out. The doctor asked me how much I drank, and of course I lied and said maybe 6 beers. That wasn't true, and he knew that, and he asked for me if I would go to CADS, in which I did. I didn't know what CADS was because I hadn't been living here in New Zealand for a long time, so I went along, and then that was my wake-up call to come back to AA. I tried AA in 2008, but I didn't stick around. I was desperate at this stage, and luckily I was, because I surrendered to the fact that my life had become unmanageable once again, and that I was powerless over alcohol. And I came into the rooms, and I was with people. I didn't feel alone, you know. I just listened. I couldn't speak for the first few weeks at all. And I just listened to other people and realised that I wasn't alone and that everyone just wants you to get well. And the love and the support that I got into when I got into the rooms was just incredible and overwhelming. This program really works. I did the suggested things. I got a sponsor. I came to meetings. I went to a meeting every day. I still go to a meeting every day because that's what works for me. And just surround your people. Surround yourself with the people that, you know, that get you, that get us alcoholics. And, you know, yeah, doing the suggested things and, yeah, just keep coming back. It loved me back to wellness. And if you're struggling, I just want you to know that we're all here for you and that you can share about anything you want when you come to these meetings and just reach out to people, because I couldn't have done this on my own. I tried many times to do this on my own and I never succeeded. And you know, gosh, the life I have now, I wake up with a purpose, you know. I feel free of all the chaos in my head, you know, when I look back and think about the carnage and, you know, having to get rid of bottles and the sneakiness and all the drama that goes with it is just, it's so freeing, and the serenity is real, you know. It's just, as long as, you know, I'm so grateful that I had the honesty, the open-mindedness and the willingness to take the action to keep coming back, no matter how I felt or how much of a struggle it was. It's just life-changing. I'm living my best life. I can honestly say that with my hand on my heart, that this program has saved my life. And yeah, it's just incredible. I'm actually a little bit lost for words to actually to say anything else, to be honest. It's just incredible, and I hope that you find what you're looking for and you've heard something today that will help you. So God bless and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Sherlyn. And lastly, can I ask Chris to share, please?
My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Just on reflection, I've been sitting in the room for a few years now, and I didn't realise how unmanageable my life was. But listening to other people's stories and tracing back my past, I realised how unmanageable my life was right from a child. I was born in a little place in the outback of Australia, and my family wasn't a very good place to be raised. My mum brought me up in a cult. And she, and my father was, he was dysfunctional as well. So my childhood wasn't very neat. I'd been beaten with a rubber hose and various other things. And hence, as soon as I was old enough, I wanted to leave home. I couldn't wait to get out of the house. My father used to have a 4-gallon keg of wine underneath the house, and from age 11 I used to come home from school and drink it, and I realised this wonderful taste of alcohol, well, it wasn't so much the taste, it was what it done for me, and it would catapult me into a different world, and I wanted to escape the world I was in, and alcohol did that for me. I left home as soon as I could at 16. I went out and worked on a farm, and the farm was about 30 miles outside the town I lived in, and I'd drive in every night and I'd drink till the pub closed, and then I'd go home. I did that for 12 months solid, and that's when I was 16 and a half, and I didn't realise it then, but that was the signs of alcoholism. I worked on the farm for a little while, then I headed for the city, because out in the countryside most young people want to go out and experience life. I hit Sydney, and it was the hippie days. It was the highlight in the hippie days, and there was drugs, and there was alcohol, and there was music, and I was in my element. Nobody knew me. I was in the middle of Sydney. Nobody knew me, and I could never have been happier. So I carried on with my friends, drugging and alcohol and drinking alcohol for about 4 or 5 years and living the hippie life, and I thought I was free. And I wanted to be free, and that's what the message was, being a hippie. But also I had dreams of, I used to watch a movie called Easy Rider, and it was a movie about guys travelling on bikes, drugging and getting alcohol. Well, there's only one thing probably good about me. I do dream, and I do try and live my dreams out. So me and my two other mates bought motorbikes. We went up to Brisbane, bought motorbikes, and we started travelling around Australia drinking. We'd land in a town or city, we'd work for 3 or 4 months, get drunk every night, and then move on. So that was a lifestyle. I just wanted to be free. I was running from something that I didn't know, and I knew nothing about alcoholism in those days. I got to Adelaide, and I was on my way to Perth. Then I was going to go and do the big OE, but I met a Kiwi, and he said, look, you've got to go to New Zealand and pick tobacco. He says, one big party. It's all you do is pick for the morning, and then you drink in the afternoon. And I thought, I'm up for that for sure. So I came to New Zealand, and I fell in love with New Zealand straight away. I just thought it was the most beautiful place. I was down now at a place called Motueka, and we pick tobacco in the morning, and we drink all afternoon, or we'll be on the beach, and we're having parties, and the guitars are going, and been eating scallops, and I just thought it was the most wonderful thing. But I'm afraid that didn't last either. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't really care. I didn't really worry about it. But I did meet a young girl, and we got married, and I realised I had to do something about my drinking. I didn't know what. But somehow I had enough semblance to pull myself together and raise my family. It was, I look back at it now, I raised my family, and I didn't drink, but I was a dry drunk. It was depression, it was anxiety, there was trauma right through. So I did my best to raise my family, and it was okay, and I did that. But once they all got older, my youngest turned 17, something clicked in me. I thought, I can't live like this. This is not the way I live. And so I started drinking again. And I left my wife, and I said, no, I've got to find something. So just from a couple of beers a night turned to more and more, and eventually my drinking took over, and I was drinking every night. I met another lady, and I'm afraid she was an alcoholic too. She didn't know it, and I didn't know it, so we had a great old time for the next 7 years. We just drank, and I shut my family out. I didn't go to any of my grandchildren's parties or anything like that. I just was a hermit. And I remember my mate rang up from Australia one. He said, oh, how are you, Chris? I said, oh, I'm fine. I've never been happier. But that was the biggest lie I've ever had, because the only happiness was because I was drinking. And one day I woke up in the morning and I realised I couldn't live without alcohol. All it was on my mind. That was it, alcohol. So I woke up, I'd go to work. I had a business. I'd go to work, but I'd knock off the earliest I could so I could start drinking, and then I'd just drink and just to blot myself out, and then I'd go to sleep at night and just wipe myself out, and I did that every night. And one day I realised, this is not a life. How can this be? But I was trapped. I had no way out. And that the freedom I wanted wasn't there. I was trapped. And I thought, this is not a way to live when you have to rely on alcohol to get you through the day or even to be happy. I thought, that's hideous. And I felt so desperate. I thought, wow, where'd my life come to when all I could do was live my life for alcohol? I hadn't heard about AA, but my partner who I was with, she knew about AA, and she suggested I go, and she said she decided to go as well. So I walked into the rooms on a Friday night in Northcote, and I hated it. I loved the message of the people, but I just felt so bad about having to be here. I thought, what's my life coming to? But I did hear deep down the message, and I thought, I've only got one shot at this. If this doesn't work, I'm gone. I've had it. But so I thought, this will never work. But I thought, again, I was determined to give it a shot. So I listened about this 100% and no holding back. So that's what I decided to do. I started going to the rooms. I got a sponsor. And on the second meeting, a sponsor looked at me one day. He said, in the second meeting, he eyeballed me. He said, Chris, do you want to live a happy life? And I went all goosebumpy. I said, well, yeah. And I could see he had it. And that set me up. He said, well, just do what I tell you. Go to the meetings, get the steps, and we'll go through life and we'll work things out. And your life will become manageable. And I believed him. And so I rode on his coattails for the next couple of years, because the next 3 years, it wasn't easy for me. There was a lot of stuff going on. I had to get rid of a lot of the trauma, a lot of the inner stuff that would cause me to drink, the urge and just not wanting to live life, just not being able to cope. That had to all change. And they talk about that in the big book about a psychic change. Well, I had to have that psychic change, because if I didn't change, I'd go back to drinking. So something had to happen for me. And slowly and steadily it started to. And at the third year, I was still struggling with stuff, but life started to get a little bit better and a little bit more manageable. And I thought, yeah, this is working. So that's what I've done. I've kept coming to the meetings. But with me, I was a lot on the spiritual path. I looked at the third step, and it says, give your life and will over to a power greater than you. And I realised this power actually helped me through not drinking. And I thought, if this power can do that, I'm going to give my life over to this power. And I thought, because I couldn't manage life, I couldn't manage without drinking, so I've thrown my weight behind the spiritual side of AA, and I realised that's what I do now. Like the other sharers, I've wake up every day and I just commit my life to a higher power. I say, okay, I can't run this life, you run it. And I thought, this is great, but I didn't realise I had so much self-will as well. And I loved to be in control. I loved to have life controlling, for me to control life, and I realise if I give this to a higher power, I have no control. So that's been a dance for me. It's up and down. Sometimes I trust in a higher power and go with it, and I say, okay, then all of a sudden I want it back, and I want this to happen, and I want that to happen, and I realise I'm back in control. So my life has definitely changed. It's getting better and better, and there's turmoil, there's things happening, and there's a bit of chaos in my life. I've got a partner who's suffering cancer, and a daughter-in-law, but the point is, it's not destroying me. It's just part of life, and I just have to trust in this power, and that's how I live. So from being free, wanting to be free in a natural way of drugs and alcohol, I've switched over now to being free to commit myself to a power that's greater than me, this power that's out there. For me, it's out there, and a relationship that I have. And life is getting freer and freer, and I can wake up in the mornings and I can face life with the freedom that whatever happens, I'm going to be okay. And I haven't mentioned the 12 steps, but that was the basis of my life. The 12 steps just changed me incredibly. And that's the one thing I've done completely well. I've absolutely done the 12 steps, and I continue to do them. I continue to revert back. And sometimes I am quite even powerless over things, even now. But then I just take a step back and try and let life evolve, and I just go along for the ride. So for me, from having a chaotic life, my life has certainly changed. And as it's not always roses, but again, the freedom I have is unbelievable, because those days I'd wake up and just have to have a drink, to now that I wake up and I can look at the sun or the clouds and the rain and think, okay, I can get through today, everything will be okay. And that's to do with this program, and listening to other people share, it just encourages me so much. And for me, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. That's all I've got to share. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris. That's all we have time for today. So thank you for John, Lynn and Chris for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we all now close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you all.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
Flooding can happen anytime. Are you prepared? Don't wait for the rain to start bucketing down. Clear those gutters, tie down loose items, and make an emergency plan to keep your whānau safe. A few minutes now can help save stress later. Stay ahead of the storm and keep your loved ones safe. Visit aucklandemergencymanagement.govt.nz/floods to find out more.
Whether you call it Aotearoa, New Zealand, New Zealand, or Nova Zealandia, it's worth knowing the history of the place most of us call home. Starting 100 million years ago and bringing us right through to modern day, the Aotearoa History Show explores some of the forces that have shaped this land and its people. from the geographical to the social and political. Produced by RNZ, the Aotearoa History Show airs here on 104.6 Planet FM every Monday at 2:35 p.m. And you can hear the full series anytime online by visiting the series and podcasts page at rnz.co.nz or using your favourite podcasting app.
Catch up with the Bridge Zone.